From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young, along with Tanya Mosley. It's Here and Now. And what to make of moves by the White House today? First, the daily coronavirus task force briefing was canceled after President Trump tweeted they were not worth the time and effort, which he tweeted after he was so criticized for musing in one last week that disinfectant might be injected into COVID-19 patients. And then this afternoon, the White House press team announced there will be a presidential press conference this evening at the time the task force briefings are usually held. So what's going on here? Washington Post national political reporter Robert Costa is here. And Bob, you know, some are saying that the task force briefings have become presidential press conferences. So your take on this switch?
Well, here's the story based on my reporting. Talking to White House officials in the last few days, they wanted to try to get the president away from doing these news briefings. They didn't feel it was politically helpful to him, and they didn't feel it was helping the cause in terms of responding to the pandemic. New Chief of Staff Mark Meadows has came up with this idea of maybe pulling back a little bit. But as we've seen time and again in over the last 3 years, the president doesn't like being controlled. And so even though the press briefing was canceled earlier Monday, he's still going to come out and do a, quote, news conference later Monday.
And what will he talk about?
It will be typical President Trump, a wide range of topics. This is not a pandemic response news conference, but I'm told by his confidants that he feels restless inside of the White House. He can't do his political rallies. So he has a new team around him in the press shop, and they just may let him be unleashed and speak his mind on a variety of issues. And that's why it's not being labeled as part of the task force.
So when are Americans going to hear from doctors? And we remember the president took the effort to address COVID-19 away from the Department of Health and Human Services when people there angered him with those dire reports that tanked the stock market, you know, about COVID-19. He gave the task force to Vice President Pence. Then he took over the task force briefings, the televised briefings. There were rumors that Health Secretary Alex Azar was going to be fired. Trump tweeted yesterday, Azar's doing a great job. But where do we stand now and when we're going to get to hear, you know, from doctors about what's going on with COVID-19?
Even when we hear from doctors, the message is sometimes muted. You look at the past week and you can detect a pattern of tension inside of the White House, inside of the administration, between the commander in chief and health officials. Whether it's Dr. Fauci not appearing or being on Saturday Night Live, or it's Dr. Redfield at the CDC talking about a second wave, then the president claims he's being misquoted. And even Dr. Bright, a senior government scientist, now saying he's a whistleblower and that he was purged because of his views and his concern about hydroxychloroquine, an anti-malaria drug. A whole range of issues inside of this administration that makes many medical experts feel at odds with their own president.
Well, the message is muted, but mixed also. Last week, Vice President Pence said the virus could be behind us by Memorial Day weekend. That's the end of May. On NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, Dr. Deborah Birx of the task force said this.
Social distancing will be with us through the summer to really ensure that we protect one another as we move through these phases.
And as you know, there's the mixed messages, but also people are worried about Dr. Anthony Fauci's future. On Saturday Night Live, Brad Pitt did a spot-on take on Fauci explaining the president's remarks. Let's listen.
Also, when he said everyone can get a test, what he meant was almost no one.
So, Bob Costa, we just got a few seconds. What's the future of these doctors?
They used to say about Steve Bannon, whenever he appeared on a magazine cover, it was an omen that he was on his way out. It's never good to get out front of President Trump in this White House. So who knows with his future, but he is widely respected. And I have to say, Brad Pitt, pretty good Brooklyn accent right there.
Robert Costa, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we're watching as a number of states throughout the country begin lifting stay-at-home orders. Georgia was one of the first to allow some businesses to open this past Friday, including hair and nail salons, bowling alleys, and gyms. Let's check in now with Dan Carden. He's the owner of Carden's Classic Gym in Marietta, and he joins us now to discuss reopening his gym to the public. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
So you've been open since Friday. How's it going? What's it been like? And are you operating while still adhering to some of the restrictions, like having folks 6 feet apart?
We are. The setting for my facility is a I call it a little mom and pop location. And it's kind of interesting what we did. We took these mechanics wipes, and they actually have more of a cotton content to them, and they really hold the moisture well from that. And their directions were, when you go to do dumbbells, whatever an exercise is or a machine, wipe it down when you come to it, wipe it down when you finish. And to tell you the truth, I don't really see any, in a traditional gym setting, people are rarely closer than 6 feet anyway. If someone's doing dumbbell curls, you don't go there and get next to them while they're doing it. They'd look at you strangely. And so far, I'm not really seeing any glitches at all. I haven't had to admonish one single person. Having said that, they're so happy to get to, these people are all fitness minded, so they're so happy to get back in the gym.
Yeah. I would guess that you opened because, you know, for the sake of the livelihood of your gym, you need to have patrons and clients come in to use your gym, because I'm wondering, I'm guessing you couldn't stay closed much longer.
We couldn't. We did it for a month, and then I was watching these numbers, you know, as the cases and deaths come and go, and saw what the governor was thinking when he let the gyms open. I knew it was time to go.
So now you have this enhanced sanitation requiring hand washing, separating the spaces at least by 6 feet. But is there any part of you that's concerned about the potential for an outbreak at your gym?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've got a father who is in his early 80s, and he has some pulmonary issues. And I haven't seen my dad, who lives in the same town with me, in 5 weeks. And with the measures we have in place here, it'd be almost impossible for that to happen.
Do you in any way feel concerned about your own safety?
No. This may sound silly, but I'd say I've probably already been exposed to it. I'd be highly surprised if it did anything to me.
Yeah. That's Dan Carden. He's the owner of Carden's Classic Gym in Marietta, Georgia. Dan, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing with us how you're handling all of this in Georgia.
Oh, thank you for your time.
Well, some countries are also lifting stay-at-home orders. Spain, which has some of the tightest lockdown restrictions in the world, allowed children to go outside and play yesterday for the first time in 6 weeks. Madrid resident Kate Walder filmed her kids for the BBC as they finally got to leave the house.
6 weeks just seems a ridiculously long time. It's the length of the summer holidays. It's time to go out.
The kids were happy to be outside, but disappointed because parks and playgrounds are still closed. The BBC's Guy Hedgeco joins us from Madrid. He's on Skype. And Guy, what is the plan moving forward in Spain now that kids are finally able to go outside?
The idea is that this is the beginning of a very gradual and slow lifting of restrictions on Spaniards' movement. It's quite a cautious first step towards that, because even children's movement is still fairly heavily restricted. They can go out for 1 hour each day. They can't go any further than 1 kilometre from their home. That's just over half a mile from their home. Mm. So, you know, it's still fairly restricted. But Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has said that he hopes next weekend to be able to continue this process of lifting restrictions and, for example, allow adults to go out and do some exercise. And he says that that will be a sort of continuation of a process which he hopes to see a gradual return to normal through May and June, although we don't know if it will be completely back to normal, but certainly he intends to take a number of measures, lifting restrictions throughout that time.
You know, only the U.S. Has there been more coronavirus cases, and only the U.S. and Italy have had more deaths than Spain. Do the numbers from the health ministry really show the crisis has peaked there?
Yes, they do appear to show that. I mean, if you look at the latest daily death toll, you know, today it was 331 people who died over the last 24 hours. It's still a sort of fairly alarming number. But when you compare it to the number of people who were dying each day at the beginning of April, that was nearly 1,000. So it has come down very gradually and steadily since then, over the last 3 weeks or so, as well as the number of infections. But the government is very determined that there shouldn't be a sort of a backlash or a comeback by the virus later on in the year, which is why it's being rather cautious about lifting these measures.
I see. I want to go back and ask you something about those restrictions. You mentioned that adults will be able to go out and to exercise possibly next weekend. I mean, this indicates for us here in the United States that these restrictions are much tighter than they are here in the U.S. People were not able to enjoy the outdoors like we are here.
Yes. I mean, even within Europe, it's seen as one of the toughest lockdowns that there is on the continent. And that, you know, obviously is to do with the fact that Spain has had so many cases and so many deaths. I mean, I can give you an idea of how tightly this lockdown is being controlled by figures from the Interior Ministry, which show that around 750,000 people have been fined for violating the terms of the lockdown. So that reflects how tight the police are being with this, how closely they're controlling it.
That's the BBC's Guy Hedgeco speaking with us from Madrid. Guy, thank you so much for this update.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure.
Today, the Small Business Administration resumes taking applications for a second round of emergency funding for small businesses impacted by this pandemic. And Democratic Congresswoman Jackie Speier of California wants transparency over how the administration distributes that money. A new investigation from Reveal, the Center for Investigative Reporting, shows that there could be some political favoritism at play. Businesses getting money from the Paycheck Protection Program based on if they are located in a red state or blue state. Joining us now is Aaron Glantz, a senior reporter at Reveal and author of the book Homewreckers. Hey, Aaron, welcome back to Here and Now.
It's good to be with you.
Yes. Yeah, so your reporting found that small businesses in blue states like California and New York, these are places we know rolled out early stay-at-home orders, actually received less federal loan money than red states that do not have stay-at-home orders like North Dakota and Nebraska. How did you guys reach that conclusion, and can you break down some of those numbers for us?
It's pretty simple arithmetic, and what you find is that in California, the state with the first most comprehensive lockdown, where more than 3 million people have filed for unemployment, only 15% of businesses got help. In New York and New Jersey, the epicenter of the pandemic, where more people have died than anywhere else, only 18% of businesses got help. And then you look at these red states that voted for Trump, where the governors have kept businesses open. North Dakota, Nebraska, South Dakota, in these states and in others across the Midwest, a majority of businesses got help from this Paycheck Protection Act.
Well, there is some pushback that perhaps businesses in red states had their loans approved sooner because they were able to do so because banks were able to get their paperwork processed to the government faster. What are you hearing about that process in the different states?
I talked to the head of the Small Business Administration in North Dakota. He seemed very well prepared. He was briefing businesses and banks in that state on March 25th, which was even before the CARES Act, which created this program, passed and was signed by President Trump. And so businesses there were able to get their paperwork in promptly. Also, businesses there, because you know, the banks were open. I talked to a number of business owners that got help in North Dakota who are still talking to me from their office. You know, Tanya, you and I are both in California. We've both been sheltering in place for over a month now. It's a lot harder to apply for relief when you can't leave your house. And so what we found is in these states where people are heavily restricted in their movements, where businesses are shut down, exactly the states that need the most help, that those are exactly the same states that are being left out of the small business relief.
I see. Yep. For full disclosure, your employer, Reveal, did get some of these PPP loans, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting actually got $75 million in relief to distribute to public radio and TV stations. But back to the point of your investigation, how is the Small Business Administration responding to these accusations that really these loans are going directly to businesses in states that voted for President Trump and have Republican governors as opposed to places that may be suffering a greater impact?
I mean, that was Jackie Speier, the congressman you mentioned in the intro, representing California. When I shared our findings with her, she went straight to concern about political favoritism and called for an investigation by the Government Accountability Office, which is the investigative arm of Congress. Now, what the Small Business Administration says is that they're just treating all of this on a first-come, first-serve basis, and that there's no favoritism at all. And another thing that they say, which is very important for all of your listeners to know, is that there is no queue. So if you tried to get, if you own a small business and you tried to get money and you didn't get it, you are not on a waiting list. You need to reapply. And you need, if you're a small business, you want to get access to this money to pay your employees, you need to get on it. You need to make sure that your bank submits the application, or else you could be left out again.
But, you know, even before your analysis of how these funds are being distributed, I mean, there was already some outrage over what companies are getting money from the Small Business Administration Paycheck Protection Program, like the restaurant chain Shake Shack, which we know ended up giving back a $10 million loan after public outcry. Has there been any attempts to make this process more transparent? I mean, it sounds like the queue is something that people just have to deal with and work around. But do we know if there are any improvements that are being made this second round?
No. In the main, it's the same program as before. You know, a lot of the Democrats are criticizing this program, and justifiably so. We just heard from Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer that they want the Trump administration to change the way they're rolling this out. I mean, their Congress, they just voted to throw $300 billion more at this same system. And now members of Congress are hoping and praying that this next $300 billion that goes out the door today will be different. But, you know, as a journalist, I don't see much reason to believe that it will be.
That's Aaron Glantz. He's a senior reporter at Reveal and author of the book Homewreckers. Aaron, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Tanya.
Well, now we want to turn to 88-year-old Nick Avjes. For the last year, he's been going every day to sit with Marion, his wife of 60-plus years, in the Marist Hill Nursing and Rehab Center in Waltham, Massachusetts. Then came COVID-19, visitors were banned. His adult children saw this taking a toll on Nick. Son Chris Avjes had an idea. It was what?
To get my dad into a bucket truck and bring him up to the third floor to see my mom.
I can't believe you did this. Nick Avjes, your dad, is at another sibling's home, his daughter Suzanne's home in Massachusetts. Chris, you're there in Connecticut. Hi, Nick.
Hold on one second. I'm so sorry.
Can I call you back now?
He got a phone call.
I'll call you back in a while. Okay.
He's a popular guy. Nick, what did you say when Chris and your other children proposed a bucket truck?
Oh, I was really excited to just get up on the way to go close to my wife. I had no reservations. I said, bring on the bucket.
Well, Chris, it wasn't as difficult as you might think it would be, but it wasn't easy either. You went on Facebook, you put out an appeal, and it looks like you got some kind of a tree work truck.
Yeah, I put a post up on Tuesday morning, and within an hour, an old friend of mine from high school contacted me and said I could get this done for you.
Ryan Donnellan at his tree service.
He actually played baseball for my dad growing up in Watertown. My dad was a coach for many years. And Wednesday afternoon, there we were. It was just a community effort to really help my dad out.
And the home itself, the facility, was okay with it, which was an important thing. But Suzanne, so what did you feel you had to do to make this safe for your 88-year-old father to go three stories up?
Well, really, it was trying to get him in the bucket. Like, looking at the bucket, I thought it originally that there was like a door that you could just step into. But no, it's like literally a bucket. So it was, we put a harness on him and kind of had to lift him up and bend him in ways that I don't think he knew that he could bend to get him to the bucket.
You had a face mask on, Nick. You had the harness, you had gloves. But were you at all afraid?
Not at all. Not at all. I just, it was an opportunity to get close to my wife.
Yeah.
It was a moving moment. I held this homemade sign that I had, "I love you, sweetheart." Oh. And we touched fingertips on the screen.
Oh. That moment of them touching the fingertips was really emotional because my mom was lower in the window because she's in a wheelchair, and you could just see this frail hand coming up to the screen and having my dad, you know, touch her was really special, really special.
Yeah, she will consider my safety of not falling.
Yeah.
Well, I could see your wife, Marion, as you come up, you rise up into the window saying, "You're giving me a heart attack." Yeah. You know, three stories up.
It's very difficult to stay away. And you do the best that you can to communicate, whether it's being lifted in a bucket, just being on the phone. I talk to her maybe a couple of times a day. And it, like I said, it's very difficult not being able to go in there and give her a hug and a kiss, which I'll do the next time I see her.
Nick, we hope for you that, you know, that this is over quickly and that you're by Marion's side. And one last question. Was this on your bucket list?
Oh, it should be on my bucket list and stay there. You know, number one on my bucket list is to get up and see her again. You know?
Well, it's, you know, quite inspirational.
Oh, I tell everyone the four-letter word, L-O-V-E. That's how what kept us together all these years and hopefully many more.
Yeah. Nick Avjez, thank you so much. All the best to you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having us and being able to put this story somewhere that may influence other people. And when times are tough, but there's ways you can get around it, I guess. Mm.
And you have to see these pictures, hereandnow.org.
This message comes from Here and Now sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. That's why you need Indeed.com. Post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive online dashboard. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free at Indeed.com/here now. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020.
And we think it's safe to say the coronavirus has everyone thinking of their own mortality. We've talked here about things you might want to add, like, do you have a healthcare proxy? And how about a will? Yes, doctors and nurses have been drawing up wills, very sad. And financial advisory firms are seeing a huge spike in demand. So let's talk about all of this with Jill Schlesinger, business analyst for CBS News, host of Jill on Money. And Jill, we know only about a third of Americans have a will. People don't want to think about it. Make the case why they should.
Well, do you want your state of residence to make decisions for you? That's what it means to die without a will or to die intestate. And I think this is really critical under normal circumstances, but obviously amid a health pandemic and a financial pandemic at that, you don't know what's next. And of course, that's true every day of your life, but now the odds are really increasing that something could happen to you. And just to have something down on paper, what is going to happen with my minor children? Who is going to take care of them? Where will my assets go? Even if I don't have a lot of assets, usually have something, you want to put your wishes in writing.
Look, you're preaching to the choir. It's either going to be the state deciding for your loved ones or your loved ones may be squabbling over something. So walk us through what other kinds of things might be in a will.
Well, you know, a will can often create the guardianship issues. And then there are two separate documents. One is called a durable power of attorney. Now, what does that do? It allows you to appoint someone to act as your financial agent in a variety of circumstances. So just imagine this. God forbid you got sick. You're in the hospital, and now someone, your spouse or maybe a child, has to actually pay some bills for you or wants to move some money in your retirement account. Things like that can actually be really easily handled by a durable power of attorney. The other document is called a healthcare proxy. Now, this allows you to appoint someone to make healthcare decisions on your behalf if you lose the ability to do so. And I would note that these can be incredibly detailed. You can have things in that document that say, I do not want to be resuscitated, a do not resuscitate order, a DNR. You may even say, I do not want to be intubated. I don't want to be put on a ventilator. And you can also say, yes, I do want those things. Mm-hmm. Again, these are actions that you are willing to put down on paper so you can make the job of managing your life easier for your loved ones.
Okay, lightning round here. Do you need to hire an attorney or can you use a software program? And if a will has to be signed by two witnesses, both at the same time present, how do you do that with social distancing?
Okay, first things first. Yes, it's preferable to have an attorney do it. But if the difference is I'm not going to do it or I'm going to use an online piece of software, then use the software. And yes, you should try to get two witnesses signing it. Now, this is very easily done, even with social distancing. There can be two people in a hospital room that do this. I have seen documents signed when people are at, you know, very end of life. They sign it. A nurse and maybe a doctor are the ones who are witnessing. And it works. What's most important, of course, once you do it, communicate with your family. Make your wishes known. Do not leave it for them to try to figure out what you would have wanted.
Yeah. Jill Schlesinger, business analyst for CBS News, host of Jill on Money. Jill, as always, thank you.
Thank you, and stay healthy.
President Trump mused about injecting disinfectants into people with COVID-19 to cure them, then later said he was being sarcastic. But still, some state hotlines went crazy with people asking, is that a treatment? And worse, others trying it. And Snopes.com, the fact-checking website founded by academics, went into overdrive. True, they said the president did say it. They posted his remarks, which didn't seem at all sarcastic. But false, they said. Do not inject or ingest disinfectants. And as you'll hear, it's something they've been saying for a while. As The Daily Show's Trevor Noah says, with stay at home, everyone now has time to launch a conspiracy theory, like the virus was engineered to kill old people.
Think about it. As soon as people started saying, okay, boomer, all of a sudden we got coronavirus and old people are dying, that can't be a coincidence.
It's funny, but rumors can be deadly. People in Mexico are assaulting healthcare workers because they think they're spreading the virus. Snopes.com had more than 10,000 requests for facts in the last 2 weeks of March alone. They divide COVID-19 information into 14 separate categories. Doreen Marchioni is managing editor. She joins us from Tacoma, Washington. In Doreen, the WHO called the sheer volume of rumors an infodemic. So just tick through some of them.
Our science reporter, Alex Kasprak, worked days on the idea that the virus is a human-made virus that was created in a laboratory in Wuhan. We have no evidence that this is true, and yet this particular misinformation continues to spread. There was an additional fact check that Alex worked on in more recent days about Bill Gates using the veil of the pandemic in an attempt to implant microchips for various nefarious reasons into all of humanity. It's all ludicrous, but it almost sounds like it could potentially be true. Like a lot of these conspiracy theories, there may be a few facts mixed in there, like the fact that Bill Gates and his foundation does in fact work tirelessly on global health initiatives, but it gets distorted and reblended.
It is completely false, the notion that Bill Gates engineered a coronavirus. It's
of
completely
course.
False that George Soros developed the coronavirus. It's false that
Correct.
Sipping water prevents infection. There was that,
Correct.
You know, the thing that purported to be from Stanford. That's not true. Mm-hmm. But take up this one. Did the news media fake those pictures showing crowds on Jacksonville Beach after that beach was opened?
Of course not. People were asking us about that. We get a fair number of rumors that are related to the manipulation of still images or so-called deepfake videos. Spent a lot of time debunking Photoshopped images and answering the question whether an image is real or not real. There was a rumor going around that some of these beach photos were manipulated. Turns out that it was, depending on your perspective or where the photograph was taken from, that these images were accurately depicting what they depicted.
But nobody, you know, manipulated the photo itself. And as you said, sometimes, you know, these rumors can be dangerous. And I'm thinking of the one that, and it's completely false, that the coronavirus was caused by cell phone towers. Again, false. 5G. But people were, yeah, 5G. But people were attacking towers.
Correct. The 5G conspiracy theories. The idea that these large cellular towers are responsible for the downfall of humanity and for every illness and terrorist attack worldwide. This bizarre conspiracy theory keeps getting trotted out. So in some ways, it wasn't surprising that 5G would be cited as being responsible for the pandemic. It's absolutely ludicrous. Of course, it's not responsible, but it doesn't stop people from people who are in a state of fear right now because this virus is deadly. Spreading that information and sharing it and asking a lot of questions about whether that could even be possible.
Yeah. You also take up political myths and rumors. Did the Trump administration fire the U.S. pandemic response team?
The key word here is whether it was actively fired or it was a line item in a budget that was allowed to just play out its course and not re-up. The bottom line is that the team is no longer employed.
Yeah.
And is no
and
longer working on the kind of stuff that could be extremely helpful now by all doctors' suggestions.
Well, just give us another example of something that you found.
So I think possibly the silliest but most dangerous rumor that we debunked in recent weeks was, and again, this is really silly sounding, but people were sharing the idea that one cure for the virus could be simply blowing a hair dryer, putting your face up to a hot hair dryer and blowing hot air into your face. If you think about that, it's ridiculous. This would not be a global pandemic if the cure were that simple, right? But yet there were so many people, it's almost too simple and too good to be true to not be considered as possible truth. Imagine people going out into the world thinking that if they just put the hair dryer to their face every morning, they'd be cool and safe to go out into the real world and interact with people. It may seem ludicrous, but that people were genuinely asking if this were true really scared us. It's like it's dangerous in the sense that some of these really simple cures and treatments and answers are propagated on social media, spun out, and that ordinary people, everyday people, like any of us, are coming to Snopes asking if there's any remote possibility this could be true because they're desperate for information and there's really so little information, so little known about the origins of the virus and its treatment.
Well, aren't people asking you about the rumor? And it is not true. We always have to preface that something's not true just in case it goes out from our program,
right.
And people think it is
right.
True. They tune out just when you give the answer. But, you know, people were asking about the false claim that drinking bleach would prevent infection.
Right. Sometimes, so what we've taken to doing, and I believe it started with COVID, when we get a meme image, so let's say we're doing a fact check on a story and we're rating the veracity of that claim. It's true, mostly false, etc. And we're the featured image on that story on our site, for instance, is like a photograph or a meme. We have taken to doing word overlays on those images that say false or hoax or scam or misleading in big yellow letters, just to make certain that when people trip across one of our fact checks, that they don't look at that image. Let's say it's an image of someone drinking bleach, right, or something silly like that, that they don't even subconsciously trip over that image and their brain thinks for a millisecond that it might be correct, that it's good to drink bleach. No, it's fake and it's false and it's wrong. You should not be doing this. And that's fairly recent for us because the stakes are so high.
Right. And Dorian, I was going to say, I'm sure there are people saying, no, people don't think it's okay to drink bleach. I mean, but do a lot of people think that?
So I guess the short answer is, in desperate times, and I would characterize these as desperate times, we're living in a crisis. I think when people are afraid and desperate, and in some cases now without income, without employment, they may be more susceptible to considering some of these otherwise silly, ludicrous rumors as potentially true because they're in a fragile state.
A recent Oxford study found that even after information has been debunked, more than half of the debunked misinformation about COVID-19 is still out there on Twitter with no warning label. So your job is hard.
Yeah.
You know, Dorian, I really want to take advantage of your work before we let you go. Kind of a lightning round. Mm-hmm. Can you just tick off just a couple things?
Yeah, sure. So along the lines of the hairdryer, blowing a hairdryer in your face, I guess I would say it is not true that quinine or tonic water, if you drink a whole bunch of it, will cure you of COVID. It won't. It's ridiculous. The virus was not, as all evidence would suggest, created, human-made, created in a laboratory in Wuhan. The virus is not a hoax created by Democrats in cooperation with China to unseat the president. The virus is very real, and it goes beyond the borders of the United States. Yeah, those are big ones. Yeah. Still very popular out there.
Dorian Marchioni at Snopes.com, the fact-checking website. We'll hook you up at hereandnow.org. Dorian, thank you so much for your work. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me on.
That is Do I Ever by singer-songwriter Brian McKnight. And for fans who were missing him, McKnight offered an Instagram treat earlier this month, a concert with him and his keyboard performing requests to benefit the World Health Organization and Global Citizen. His concert is just one of many performances from some of our favorite artists taking to social media to entertain us during these uncertain times. And Brian McKnight joins us now via Skype. Welcome, Brian, and tell us more about this Instagram concert.
I've been doing this for my fans way before there was a pandemic. The reason why I decided to do it when I did it was that I wanted to do it for a cause. What I didn't want was people to think that I was sitting at home saying, oh, nobody's paying attention to me right now. Not that I'm saying that other people are doing that, but everybody else is doing whatever they want to do is fine. It's just I didn't want that for myself.
But, you know, it also speaks to just the power of music and how it can kind of be a soothing thing for us. And so these concerts really provide that, while at the same time, your concert in particular, providing entertainment for a good cause.
Right. And I think that's the really great point. One of the things that this situation has been a positive is people are going back to more traditional forms of entertainment to be the buffer that's getting them through the tough days that we've seen and the ones that are ahead. And hopefully that permeates our lives moving forward, because there are so many people out there that still love music and that are using music to be that buffer.
Yeah. I want to listen to another one of your classics that you performed on Instagram, and that's One Last Cry.
I gave my best to you, nothing for me to do, but I've one last cry, one last cry, before I leave it all behind. I gotta put you out of my mind this time. Stop living a lie, I know.
Brian, I actually had a moment watching that when I went back to the 90s. I was sitting watching it and I was singing at the top of my lungs and my kids were like, "Are you okay, Mommy?" Can we talk a little bit about your voice? You've been performing for some 30 years and it sounds the exact same way as it did in the 90s. How do you do? What do you do to keep in shape?
Well, that's the number one thing, staying in some sort of relative shape. You know, singing mostly is breathing, and the better you can breathe, the easier it is to hit the notes that you're trying to hit and to stay on those notes. And really just caring. I care about the way that I sound, and I'm not saying again that other people don't. I'm just telling you that I really, really do. I understand the instrument that I've been given, and I've always, from day one, taken care of it.
Yeah, we should mention you recently released some new music, a song called Nobody. Let's listen.
Nobody's hand but yours. You can believe for sure I'll be nobody's man but yours, baby. I'll kiss.
Brian, we read that you wrote this for your wife Leilani and that you say it's the best song you've written in a long time.
Oh no, it's the best song I've ever written, period. Every song that I've written since Leilani came into my life has been about her and about us and about our life that we've lived now for almost 7.5 years now. And, you know, people will say, well, what about Back at One? What about these other big hits? Those are big hits and that's what they are. But I'm talking about the fact that this is the first time in my life where I've written songs that actually mean something to me.
Isn't love beautiful?
Yeah, I found that at a later point in my life, but I wouldn't trade it. Just having this is... You know, that's what the song says. It's not just that I'll be nobody's man but yours. I don't think about anyone. I'm never going to touch anyone. I'm never going to, you know, look at anyone. That's what love does for you. And that's what I wanted to convey in this song.
Oh, congratulations to you and Leilani. That is beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, you have a new album, Exodus, that's due to come out. Is it true that you're saying this might be your last album?
I think this will probably be my last album of brand new music. There's so many other things that I'd like to do. Now that I have my wife and my family, I really want to spend less time on the road and really enjoy life a little bit more than just working all the time, which I've done since I was 19 years old. And I think after 20 albums, I think I've said it all. I think I've done everything I've wanted to do. And I'm not saying I'm retiring. I'm just saying as far as creating and releasing new music, this is probably the last one.
Well, congratulations. And thank you so much for the music that you've put out into the world and these Instagram concerts that you've done to really give us the power of music during these uncertain times.
Oh, thank you. And you're welcome. And hopefully this will be over relatively soon. We can go back to doing it the conventional way. But in the meantime, at least we have that.
And Brian McKnight's song is Nobody. His album Exodus will be out later this year. And Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Tanya Mosley.
I'm Robin Young. Tanya, thank you. This is Here and Now.
Nobody else's lips. My command is your head.